Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Tonight on Black Girl Stuff. Right now on Black Girl Stuff.
They got their own mess going on.
Ja Rule comes by to clear up some things like being caught between Irv and Ashanti.
This is why I'm saying nobody wants to have the real conversation.
Plus, he gets serious about hip-hop's state of emergency.
My hands ain't clean. I ran around screaming this murder for 20 years.
But first, we go in the comments to reveal how filters might be driving women to get their bodies done.
And why we now think the mirror is a lie.
I look on fleek today, bitch. We're getting litty.
And we discuss if code switching is necessary to protect the culture.
Ain't no lace, bitch. These are my real hairs.
I don't really see a lot of black women coming through these doors.
And I catch up with SNL's Kenan Thompson as he celebrates a major milestone. Then I get schooled by Abbott Elementary's Tyler James Williams.
Part of my mission statement was to give credence to the average black male voice.
While Tyler Perry looks to be going for Oscar gold with A Jazzman's Blues.
That's what Jazzman is about for me, letting people see the movie, but also encouraging them to really focus on what really happened.
All that and more on tonight's edition of Black Girl Stuff. Welcome to Black Girl Stuff. Tonight, we're going 4-on-1 with Murder, Inc.'s Ja Rule, and we got SNL's Kenan Thompson, Abbott Elementary's Tyler James Williams, and Tyler Perry with his new masterpiece, A Jazzman Blues. But right now, it's time to get deep in the comments about a new social media spurred epidemic. The experts are calling it body dysmorphia. Now, for some of y'all who don't know what body dysmorphia is, by definition, it is a mental illness involving obsession focused on a perceived flaw in appearance. The flaw may be minor or even imagined, but the person may spend hours a day trying to fix it, and the person may try many cosmetic procedures or exercise to excessiveness. So, I gotta ask you all, do y'all feel like social media is to blame for this new term and condition?
No. I don't think social media is to blame any more or any less than magazines of the past and TV programming of the past. We've always had this level of fixation, specifically on women's bodies and women, you know, thinking through when it comes to body dysmorphia or anything that has to come with regulating and tracking what you think is good or not about your personal body. I think social media is just the new wave of how we do it. But it doesn't mean it's the end all, be all, and the reason for this term.
I don't think it's the only thing that can cause body dysmorphia, but I definitely believe that it compounds it. And even Facebook, Instagram know this. Just last year, it was the Wall Street Journal that unveiled a study, an internal study done by Facebook about how social media is negatively impacting its users. Mm-hmm. Talking about 1 out of 5 teens who felt worse after being on social media, and 6% of American users who felt that their desires to kill themselves were linked to Instagram. Wow. So they have done these studies internally knowing that this is having an effect on people, young people especially. So I feel like there could be deep-rooted insecurities that you have naturally or have developed over time, and then you get on social media, you're compounded, you know, bombarded by all of these images of perfection that aren't realistic, and then it's like,
terrible concoction.
Right, 2 points because you guys said two different things. So yeah. You first said mm-hmm. that back in the day it started with tabloids and magazines, but you got to understand those celebrities were under stress. We wondered why these celebrities would kill themselves or feel suicidal, and we didn't understand the stress that they were going to, but now everybody has a phone. So now your regular person is the celebrity. They're taking pictures and they feel the pressure to be photo shoot ready. There is a cosmetic surgeon who coined the term selfie dysmorphia.
Wow.
So back in the day, people used to go to these surgeons and they used to say, hey, I want to look like Kim Kardashian. I want lips like Angelina Jolie. But now people are going to the doctors now, these cosmetic surgeons and dermatologists, and they're saying, I want to look like this filter.
Wow.
Because, yes.
Yeah.
So you get online, and there's a lot of people who they only want to be seen with this filter
mm-hmm.
on social media. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Started from, they call it Snapchat dysmorphia. Yeah. That's the name of it. It is a term.
And to your point, yeah. like, and to all your points, I think that there are many layers. There are different mm-hmm. Avenues of media that have always given us this, insecurities. But I think naturally, as women, we always have not been fully satisfied with how we feel and how we look with ourselves. Going back in the older days, women used to wear those corsets and like break their bones ribs. To their ribs to make their waist mm-hmm. smaller. And mm-hmm. even in Chinese culture, they're buying their feet to be more attractive so they can find
but
husbands.
To look like a cartoon.
So, wait, no, I'm not saying.
There's
I'm not
levels.
Saying.
There are levels.
Wait, there are levels. Wait, I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm saying that it's social media has put a spotlight on it, but it's not nothing new. I think what social media does that none of these other media forms have ever done is makes it accessible. So before, like you said, we didn't have filters. You mm-hmm. look like what you look like when you took the picture. Mm-hmm. But now because we have so many apps, you can edit, you can put these filters on it. It's making it look like everybody looks like this. So I have to look like this in order to get the likes, in order to get shared, in order to be popular.
So you're agreeing that social media doesn't have
a well, there's a lot of unrealistic standards though, because not only that, people are going online, all right, selling things like booty bands and waist trainers when in fact they've had mountains of liposuction and all sorts of surgery saying, mm-hmm. if you buy this product, you can look like me. So yeah. people are flat out lying. Right. We've completely, sued companies mm-hmm. for this kind of false advertising. But now it's just the average person saying, that's buy it. This product, buy this flat tummy tea, and you'll be skinny like me. So you're lying to people on top of that. And so for me, it's like, people could buy that flat tummy tea. Why am I not getting skinnier like my influencer on Instagram? Yeah. Because she lied to you. That's right. not what mm-hmm. she did. And right. so how hurtful would that be to think that you've worked out as hard as you could, or you did all this, and you're still don't have the perfect hourglass shape, and that's what's harmful and detrimental
super
to our children.
Super harmful. My trainer to this day, anytime I send him something of like, oh, this is my inspo of the week, this is kind of what we're trying to gear towards, he's like, listen, I just want to make sure this person didn't have anything done. Let me take a look at their page. Let me make sure, because there's a lot of folks who would portray, mm-hmm. That they're the fitness gurus after they got all the work to get that done. But I just want to make sure that we touch on some folks' comments when it comes to mm-hmm. comes to this, especially because it relates to social media. So one user mentioned that unlike many, they opened up about their journey. She said, I spent so much of my life feeling inadequate, constantly comparing myself to others, but after some healing and self-acceptance work, it's so freeing and relieving to be able to see other beautiful women and appreciate them instead of feeling threatened by them.
Based off that comment, what do you think the solution is in this scenario? Like, how do you feel like you truly accept who you are in your natural state? I'm talking from natural hair to natural skin to natural body to natural flaws. How do we as women get to that point where we can step out that norm or that, social media standard and say, I love myself fully.
You've got to decide. It's a decision. I think what social media is, it's just going to be a regurgitation of what you already know and hear from your peers, mm-hmm. from your community. Because there's a lot of different ranges you can go. You can decide to follow the social media folks and follow friends who may not have the type of body that is realistic, or you can do the complete opposite. You can decide to show yourself more.
For an example, I noticed that I started to feel uncomfortable when I didn't see myself. I was done up so much that when I didn't have makeup on or when I didn't have my lashes done, I felt like I looked tired. So what I started to do, I didn't want to feel like I look better with something. Mm-hmm. What I started to do, take a break. Right. I need to take a break so I can fall. I want to fall in love with my natural self and never fall out of love with my natural self. This is how I look. Right. I never want to feel like, oh, I need a filter to go live. No.
Fact.
This is what I look like. Yeah. So just being comfortable with yourself and not feeling like you have to put a pound of makeup on to go to the store. You don't have to do that. If you want to do that, yes, do it sometimes. Yeah. It's an accessory. But it's not a necessity you need Monday through through Sunday.
Yeah, and that's right. An important message for our children, because I feel like they're the ones who are really suffering right now, because it's very hard to distinguish the real from the fake. And I feel like older, you know, adult women can say, okay, that's definitely modified here. But kids might think like, oh, wow, I don't look like this is what I have to look like. How many changes do I have to do this? So I feel like limiting screen time is really important. I feel that's like there's a lot of accountability that should fall upon a lot of these social media outlets as well. I feel like Instagram, you're bombarded by these images of perfection on your explore page. I'm like, who the hell are these people? I just want to see, you know, vacation spots, and you're flooding my stuff with people I don't even know because you think I want to see it and I don't. You know what I mean? And so now you're bringing this, inviting all of this stuff into my world that I have to completely sort through, and I don't want to have to deal with that. And I think that social media should, you know, step up and, you know, take accountability.
I love those tangible solutions, limiting screen time, making the decision, accepting yourself raw. And I also would like to add, like, taking care of yourself, because I've noticed that we love what we take care of. So when we, I see Demetri, we be in the gym, we be on our gym grind.
Okay.
So it's like, we do, not the same. We be in the gym. When you are in the gym working out and you take pride and you care about what you eat, you feel good about your body no matter what size or shape you are. I'll keep it real with y'all. Like, I have been in a position, especially now, not only on social media, but when I worked in a strip club, I felt like I needed ass shots. And then now with social media, everybody's getting fillers. So I have been on social media looking like, damn, do I need my lips done? Knowing good and well my face is perfect, because God did his thug thizzle with it. Right. You know
what I'm saying? Okay, because you look damn good.
Period. So I got to ask y'all, like...
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Have you ever experienced that?
I never felt like, oh, do I need to do something because of them? I think it's more maybe a little body dysmorphia where I was in my own head. But has comments got to me? Hell yeah. And has it put me in a depressive state? I was like, hell yeah. I feel like that's why we should monitor our kids, like you said, screen time, because to see those comments, as much as people say, I don't care what people say, it's subliminally in your head. You read it. Just the same way you read a comment, make you feel good, or somebody can say, hey, girl, your nails look good, and it feels good. Sometimes that negative comment could stick. You can only, you say, but I block out so much. So has it affected me, to answer your question? It has affected me before, but not to the point where I wanted to change for them.
I guess for me, no, because I know that a lot of things are fake online. But I do think that social media gets, you know, a terrible rap, and it deserves that 100%. But I also think there are some positive things about social media. Yes. I mean, that you see on TikTok and how it can uplift people and showing that this is my natural body. It's okay. I see a lot of mothers who show off their stretch marks and their, you know, bodies, and they're like, this is real. You don't see this all the time, but I'm going to show you, and it's acceptable and it's okay. And so I applaud mothers who do those kinds of things. I applaud young teenagers who show off pimples. We've all had pimples. We don't like pimples, but it's like, hey, I'm still beautiful if I have them. There's so much courage on the internet, and people that show you how, this is a more flattering dress for your body type, and so you know how to dress, and it makes you feel more confident. Mm-hmm. I've worn things that totally didn't flatter my body, and I'm like, damn, I don't look so good today, but I'm like, I learned. I'm like, wait a minute, this flatters your body type. Right. You have a damn good body type. It's okay, and so there are a lot of great things out there, and so for me, that's what I take from. I'm like, oh, I like how she did her makeup. I'm going on YouTube, how she did that right there. Like, I'm going to find out, and I love that now we have that access, and it's not limited to the ultra-rich celebrity.
Yeah. I think these are great points. And to the young ladies out there, like, love yourself. Don't...
And men.
And men, because men are on the way, too. Yeah. Everybody out there, love yourself, because, you know, you don't have to follow all these trends. You don't know the shelf life of all these cosmetic surgeries. And what if your soulmate can't find you because you don't look like what your soul looked like when God made you?
Okay.
Anyway, and up next, we're coming back with another round of In the Comments. But first, the queen, Beyonce, said it best, Pretty Hurt.
Pretty hurt, shine the light on whatever's worth. Perfection is an
period. I look on fleek today, bitch. We're getting litty. We're getting litty in the car, okay? We acting out, we being a fool.
It's the acting.
Ain't no lace, bitch. These are my real hairs. These are my real hairs. Cinderella princess shit.
Wow, the cultural appropriation is just cringy. Mm-hmm. Well, some people feel we have to protect Black vernacular, even if that means code switching in certain environments. For this next round of In the Comments, let's see if Black Twitter can unlock the code to gatekeeping by code switching. A Twitter thread about code switching went viral when one user posted how she failed at gatekeeping for the Black community. So others joined the conversation by sharing their slip-ups at work.
Tisk, tisk, sis.
Right? A person tweeted, forgot to code switch in a meeting on Thursday and said, spin the block. My face immediately got hot from embarrassment, but they ate it up. Now they keep using it in the wrong context.
Oh, wow.
Of course.
Well, she then went on to explain how her coworkers use the term incorrectly. So you got to check this out right here.
The coffee went cold and a new batch needed to be made. So someone excitedly announced that they spun the block on a new batch of coffee, if anyone was interested. Like, that's definitely not how you use that term. Like, you don't spin the block on coffee.
Okay. No, you don't.
If it's cold brew.
And one Twitter user responded, so you let spin the block get gentrified?
Right.
When it's a Fox News headline, you may have to face the Black tribunal.
Agreed. Yes. Agreed. No, for sure.
So what do you guys think about that? That was the best.
I feel like we have to definitely gatekeep some of our swag, our sauce. Like, you can't be giving it to everybody because, again, they don't even know what to do with it.
But
they're using it wrong.
That every day on Black Twitter. I'm like, if you gonna do it full out. I think that's part of being hot. People gonna want to emulate it.
We gotta look at some more of these comments. Sure.
This one tweet said, I once told an exec that it was time to make a pimp decision.
Okay.
So, sis, this is light work.
Yeah. You can't use pimp decisions in here.
It's too much. But okay, y'all, can we talk about the fumble and save in this next tweet? So one person said, I messaged a coworker, it's all good gravy. He asked me if gravy was a typo or did I mean to give him a new nickname. His name is Gary. But now I just call him Gravy. I love that.
Wow.
What up, Gravy? I would call it, what's up, Gravy? Gary?
Gravy,
that's
Gary.
My dude. Double G, you know? Way to run with protecting our culture. I love it.
Yeah, and I had to pivot with this one. With that said, we got into talking about gatekeeping by code switching, right? Mm-hmm. Is code switching necessary to protect Black vernacular? Our slang.
I definitely agree that it is. I grew up in a predominantly white elementary through high school, so I know what it's like to have white friends, and they want to be cool. They mean well sometimes, but it's like you say, I feel like you got to protect the culture just a little bit because they always going to use it wrong. Like, my homegirl Katie was like, well, have you ever lived in a bando? It's like, no, Katie, I've never lived in an abandoned house. Please don't ever ask me that.
But you see, just means they hear it anyway, right? I feel like a part of being hot and a part of having Black culture is knowing that people are going to want to emulate that. I feel like if you're the Black person that's gatekeeping, without even knowing it, I feel like you're going to end up looking like the square or the person that's out of touch. It's like, why don't
you
know that?
But it can be kind of cringy. I mean, look at the videos that we just saw and the way that they're appropriating this culture. And I think a lot of the harms and the dangers come from people who are culture vultures and will steal this, profit on our style, our fashion, our slang, sell it, decry it later. My prime example of this is Miley Cyrus. I mean, back in 2013, she was doing a lot of twerking. Yeah. 2017, she's decrying hip-hop culture, saying that it's lewd, it's sexist. 2019, she apologizes, and I'm all about that because I don't think we automatically have to cancel people. Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, just last year, you're back shaking your ass on the stage with Meg Thee Stallion because she's the hot girl. Yeah. So you follow Black culture, you emulate it when it profits you, when it suits you, and that's acceptable when Black people have been completely demoralized for just being ourselves.
I code switch sometimes too because I think that often, you know, as Black women, we talk with a lot of passion, a lot of aggression, and that can come off very aggressive to some people. So in certain settings, when I change my audience, I will change how I communicate with that audience to be heard in the true intention that I have. If the police pull over, I ain't talking like Brunei from the A. I'll be like, yes, sir, how may I help you? Like, I'm gonna definitely change. So you can't ever say that I was aggressive or coming at you the wrong way.
Well, I don't think that you should have to temper who you are to fit in, and I think that's something that we have to fight against, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you want to talk a certain way in a public setting, I think there are certain slang words that maybe, you know, you can't use because not everybody understands it. And if you're speaking to wide audiences, you know, you might lose some people. But the thing is like, if I feel like, you know, I can't say certain things because it's not acceptable, and I'm not talking about curse words here. I'm just talking about Black vernacular slang, you know, totally work appropriate, and somehow that's not acceptable. I think we have to fight against that. And I feel like we also need to look at people who've taken slang words, Poppin' Tags, Blueprint 2. I know you're a huge Jay-Z fan over there. All of us are, right?
Yeah.
Song called Poppin' Tags, 2002 came out. Fast forward 12 years, you've got Macklemore, Ryan Lewis taking Poppin' Tags and their famous song, Thrift Shop, winning Best Rap Song in 2014, Best Rap Album because of that single over, I mean, what? Some of the best albums of all time. I mean, Good Kid, Mad City. So you're taking it, profiting on it, and that's where I feel like I understand why people feel that they have to gatekeep our vernacular.
If we want to be the trendsetters, we want to say we're the hottest, we want to say we are culture, that's what comes along with it. There's always going to be counterfeit bags. There's always going to be counterfeit slang.
All right. So we've left you with a lot to think about when it comes to code switching. We want to hear more from you in the comments. So be sure to comment under our Black Girl Stuff YouTube page. Coming up next, Kenan Thompson, Tyler James Williams, and Tyler Perry are all checking into the Kennedy Chronicles, all straight ahead.
Every night, I turn the TV on and cry.
I cry.
I say why, I feel like we're all gonna die. So come back around.
You
still singing that, right?
Won't you back somehow? I need you in my life.
Black Girl Stuff. That was the master of impersonations, Kenan Thompson, serving up his best boy band harmony. Kennedy Rue is back in the house to give Kenan his props for being the longest running cast member on Saturday Night Live. Kennedy, what's good, girl?
Hey, guys! Yes, I'm so excited to be back with you ladies. I have some awesome interviews for you this week, starting with Kenan Thompson. And he talked about taking a stand and refusing to play Black women so SNL will actually hire more Black women for the job. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's amazing. And I think that's dope to even step outside of the box as an artist to like challenge himself, because a lot of comedians kind of rely on that that role of, you know, putting a wig on and just being a Black woman. But it's like, let the Black women be Black women.
Absolutely.
Especially when you think about there's only been, you know, seven Black female comedians in the 44-year history. That is SNL. The most recent being Ego Wodim. Nightjack Girl. Okay. She's absolutely hilarious. But that's huge because there are opportunities that come with SNL. I mean, SNL's launched the careers of Eddie Murphy, Chris Rock, Bill Murray, Adam Sandler. The list goes on and on. It's a huge platform. And so we need our sisters getting those opportunities, too.
Yeah, and you put his foot down and advocated for women. Check it out.
You took a stand about 10 years ago on SNL when you refused to play women and impersonate women. Do you think enough progress has been made on that front in terms of comedians, you know, embodying women's personas and portraying women?
Probably not. I did it personally because I felt like I might have been in the way of actual Black women's opportunities to join the show because it was such an easy laugh or a laugh that you can kind of count on time and time again. It's kind of the obvious thing, the guy in the dress. Like, it's a, you know, a visual stimulating laugh immediately. I understood why they kept it going so much, but then it started to feel like now we're kind of using it maybe as a crutch, and I don't really see a lot of Black women coming through these doors, and I was wondering if I was in the way of that at all. So I was like, maybe let me just force the issue and remove myself completely from that situation and see what happens. And what I thought would happen was right. They needed to actually hire the women, you know, and get them in there.
Wow. I love that when he had the opportunity to take a stand, he actually took it and and was aware, like, wait a minute, I could be taking the jobs of other Black women.
And, you know, that is what being an ally is, putting yourself on the forefront to, you know, maybe take some slack or maybe take a pay cut for the betterment of who you're trying to uplift. Yeah. So I thought that that was really, really crucial.
All right, Kennedy, so I heard you got schooled by Abbott Elementary's Tyler James Williams and William Davis. Share with us what you learned.
Yes, it's true. The Emmy nominee show has a great cast of characters that take what they do to heart. Take a look. Only 2% of educators in the school system are Black men.
How important was it for you to embody this portrayal, and how influential do you hope that is, you know, to hopefully a new crop of young people who are interested in the profession?
The reason why I did the show, I heard that, and that was it. That was like, the script was really good. Quinta had a really great idea, and I thought that, you know, the show is going to be successful, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it needs me. You know what I mean? And when I heard that, I think part of my mission statement, if I had to have one as a creator, was to give credence to the average Black male voice. And to hear that it was so underrepresented, to me, that's just a group of people who we forgot about and who we lost and who need to be seen and validated. And that's where I like to work. So I, one, hope that that 2% feels super seen, feels like there's a spotlight on them. And I hope that 2% grows because of it.
I only had two black male teachers in my whole elementary school experience. They were all either African-American female or white female, white men. I think as an African-American child, a male child, that it would have been, I think it would have made my experience richer and more complete if I had more black male teachers.
Wow. What a great comment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They really speak to one of the core issues when it comes to the school-to-prison pipeline. Mm. And we know that black students are more than 3 times likely to be expelled when compared to their white counterparts. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about that lack of representation in the classroom, these are students who don't have these black male role models that they can relate to. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see children slipping into the system. It's a really, really serious issue. I'm glad they brought it up, and you too.
Yeah, and I love that they're advocating for more black men to be teachers in elementary school, especially that young age, because that's when you're learning a lot about yourself. Mm-hmm. But I actually had a black male elementary school teacher in fourth grade. Shout out to Mr. Calloway. Yes. He made us read Rich Dad, Poor Dad in fourth grade, and I took that experience with me for the rest of my life. So I think, like they said, those teachers are really the most impactful when it comes to
Yeah. I had two black male teachers throughout my entire, like, just academic career.
Really?
I can only speak to, yeah, you know, we're going to do shout-outs, too. Okay, shout-out Mr. Brown. You know, but outside of that, though, I can only imagine, it didn't really affect me, and I think perhaps because, you know, I'm a black woman, I can only imagine my brothers going to school and not feeling seen in that way, because I know my brother, for instance, got in a lot of trouble going to school because it was a level of automatically picking and deciding that he's a troublemaker, or he doesn't have this, or he doesn't have that. And it was, he was the chillest, the smartest, the most down-to-earth guy. And I think, again, what Demetria was saying, that relatability is key. Because it's one thing to have them there, but it's another thing that Tyler is showing, that he shows in Abbott Elementary, is the fact that they can relate to him. So it's important.
And I think that 2%, people are so focused on that number being so small, but that doesn't mean that these people don't deserve a voice, that they don't deserve representation. And I think that's so important for a big network show to show this small portion of the population, and hopefully that'll inspire that number to grow.
Speaking of representation and history, I'm so excited to learn about what Tyler Perry had to say about A Jazzman Blues. It looks so good.
It does.
Kennedy, you've got to spill the tea, sis.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so this is Tyler's passion project, and it speaks to audiences on so many different levels. He's going to surprise people with this one. Let's take a look.
What I love about this movie is I feel like, although it's set in the Jim Crow era, there are cultural relevance today that's still so important. I mean, colorism, white supremacist, revisionist history, all those years after you wrote this, what does it say that there are still issues today that we're grappling with, trying to contend with as a country?
It's shocking to me, and that's part of the reason I wanted to do it, watching certain political figures want to homogenize the history of Black people in the country or make it palatable for younger white kids to learn, rather than telling it in the brutality of what it is and how awful Jim Crow was. And I'm also shocked to see young Black kids who say, oh, we don't want to talk about that. Where's the Black joy? What do you mean? We've got to realize, recognize, and acknowledge the history of the people who paved the way so that we can love and be free and drink from water fountains. And to ignore those people is the wrong thing to do. So that's what Jazzman is about for me, letting people see the movie, but also encouraging them to really focus on what really happened.
Wow. Yeah.
powerful.
Yes. Powerful. Yes. Mm-hmm. No, this week was very powerful. We contended with some big topics, some, you know, stuff that has to do with our everyday mm-hmm. lives and how we see ourselves. And I think it was so important that Tyler did this movie, especially right now, because mm-hmm. these are conversations, as you ladies know, you talk about all the time.
Still having.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I have to ask you all, he made a good point. Where's the black joy? We don't need any more movies about enslavement, about Jim Crow. Do you feel like the time has passed for these movies, or do you feel like conversations still need to be had surrounding these topics?
I kind of understand that point, because in some cases I do fall into that category of like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I want to see black trauma on screen. Like I actually went to go see, you know, Till the other day, a screening, and I was wrestling whether or not to go because of that. I didn't know if I wanted to see the murder of Emmett Till on display. And granted, we needed to, and we need to continuously. There's other stories that are, you know, equally or more horrific in different races that are consistently being told. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that they shouldn't, but at the same time that they should, this was also a part of our history and not our collective history.
Right.
Not just black history.
Right.
So
American
we need to
history.
Know.
And we make history sound so long ago, but growing up in the South, my grandmother, my mother always preached to me like that wasn't that long ago. Like they lived through these experiences and they saw them firsthand. Mm-hmm. So to understand, like you said, knowing where you came from to know where you're going, because then they'll understand why we go through or why we fight so hard for a lot of the issues that we're trying to overcome.
Those are
still
great points. I'm with all of that. And I think it's interesting, the premise of this movie, Jazzman's Blues, I mean, about interracial love. I'm the product of interracial marriage. Both of my parents were born in 1967, and that's when interracial marriage became legalized across the United States in Loving v. Virginia, right? And so I look at this and I think about how history, they're trying to make it more palatable, as Tyler Perry said, sugarcoating it, watering it down. There are real lawmakers across this country would have us change the name of slavery and call it, what was it? To make it more palatable and nice. And I feel like, you know, as Americans, we're constantly reminded of the tragedy that is 9/11. It's remember 9/11, but it's like, forget slavery.
Yeah.
Put it under the proverbial rug. Forget about it, right? And that's really what's happening to our culture, our history. And so there are kids that are growing up thinking, it wasn't that big of a deal when it is. And so we can't allow this to keep happening.
Well, thank you so much, Kennedy, for stopping by and giving us the deets on what's happening.
What's up, everyone? It's Boss Britt.
And it's DJ Excel.
If you're a fan of the queer culture and lifestyle, then be sure to check out and subscribe to the No Homo Show.
We're a show that shares true stories that are uncut, funny, relatable, and of course, gay from a lesbian's perspective.
That's right. Brought to you exclusively by the Revolt Podcast Network.
The street. Coming up, we talk to the MC who made singing on rap tracks a trend, the legendary Ja Rule checks in with us.
What would I be without my baby? The thought alone might break me. And I don't want to go crazy. But every dog needs a lady.
We share something so rare, but who cares? You cares, baby.
I'm not always there when you call, but I'm
guest has been putting it on us for over 20 years, and we could not wait to speak with him. Ja Rule, welcome to the BGS house.
Yes, thank you for sitting down with us.
Yo, thanks for having me in the BGS house. I'm honored.
You know, we have to talk about the recent BET Murder, Inc. documentary that you co-executive produced.
Yes.
It was honestly one of the juiciest hip-hop stories that I've seen made in a while.
Thank you.
Of course. In one of the segments, you mentioned, you know, one day you could be on top of the world, and the next day, the world can be on top of you. You were saying that in relation to everything going on with Murder, Inc., and specifically 50. And you said that fans and hip-hop overall abandoned you. I want to just go into that a little bit more. What did you mean by that statement?
Music is subjective. You don't have to like Ja Rule. You don't have to like, you know, whoever. So it was like a big culture shock to me. Even my success was the same thing. It was like one day I was just a kid from Hollis, Queens, you know, in the hood, and a week later I was a huge star. And that's not to say that I didn't put in a lot of work before that, you know, but that's just how success happens. You know, when it happens, it happens. And you know, when bad things happen, that also happens. It like it's not a gradual thing. It's like a punch in the face, knockout blow. holy shit, what just happened? You know, everything is upside down. And I went through that, and I felt like it was unwarranted. I felt like, you know, I didn't do anything to my fans, you know, but make great music and, you know, be a dope artist, you know, bring something new to the table that artist wasn't doing at the time, catered to the ladies, you know, made those beautiful records, wrote a lot of beautiful records for other artists. You know, it's like Big said it best. You know, they love you.
And then they hate you.
Now it's time for the love again.
It's no secret that you and Ashanti are like brother and sister. Do you feel like you were kind of caught in the middle of the Irv Gotti and Ashanti situation?
Of course, I'm kind of going to get caught in the middle of these things. You know, that's my brother. That's my sister. Right. I love them both. And you know, they got their own mess going on. And you know, I just wish everybody could play nice and, you know, we can move on from the past and move on to all our future endeavors, which is everybody's doing amazing things. So there's no issues with any of us, with me or with, you know, they have their issues. You know, I don't have issues with anybody.
I hear you got something else to share with us and the world that you got working on. Let's hear about it, Icon. Mm-hmm. What you got? Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. I created a live streaming platform. It's kind of the first of its kind. It's a Web3 live streaming platform. And what that means is I allow content creators to own their content, to monetize their content in a lot of different ways. I created Icon to be able to do that. The app is available right now in Apple TV, in the Apple App Store. So you can get it and download it and put up, you know, live videos, go live with up to 6 people.
Oh,
you know,
fire.
Get tips right live in real time, or you know, artists can do pay-per-view events on the platform, or they can do meet and greets, you know, like stuff like that. So it's a lot of stuff.
So we know that you created this series called Vibe, and on the app, you're able to secure the legendary Big Daddy Kane. How did you make that collab happen?
I love Kane. I grew up on Kane, one of my favorite artists. Kane was actually one of the first, like, sexy, you know what I'm saying? He was doing it different. He just took hip-hop to a different level. You know, as far as the fashion and the jewelry, I'm honored to be able to have this brother bless the stage, you know, on my platform, September 28th. Vibes is about iconic artists performing their classic albums. Mm. So that classic body of work that we all love, those album cuts that, you know, maybe they don't get to perform ever, sometimes in many cases. You know, so I did the first one. I did my album Pain Is Love live. It was amazing. And then the second one was my brothers, Raekwon and Ghostface. They did Only Built for Cuban Links. Ooh,
wow.
It was out of this world.
Hip hop has ushered in so many millionaires, billionaires, icons, moguls, right? And you're a mogul yourself. Do you ever feel like there's a competition between the big names in hip hop to be like the biggest mogul? Or do you feel like you're in a healthy competition? Or do you feel like it's like, I gotta be the number one in the spot?
It doesn't always have to be just one.
Facts.
It should be more than one. It should be many of us. Like, you know, and in our black community, it's like one at a time, motherfucker. Listen, I root for all my brothers that are doing their thing in this business, in this industry, because it's a tough industry. It wasn't built for us to succeed. Mm-hmm. America wasn't built for black men to succeed. Mm-hmm. Wasn't built for black women to succeed. Mm-hmm. So when I see you beautiful black women sitting on this couch doing this, you know, interview, this platform that y'all have, it's amazing. And it's with Revolt, which is a black man's, you know, a network.
Fact.
And then here I am, another black man sitting here with my own live streaming network and platform. You know, so this is what we are supposed to be, kings and queens. You know, we are supposed to be doing this. This is not, we shouldn't be shocked at what black people are able to accomplish, you know, and we should really be leaning on each other, helping each other. I think the more we do that, you know, the greater our accomplishments become.
You speak of brotherhood, and I think it's been kind of a turbulent time when it comes to our young male artists. A lot of brothers are being lost to this game. I mean, what's your opinion? What's your take on this that's happening?
I hate it. These are the conversations, the real conversations that us as a community need to have, but nobody wants to really, really have the real conversation. As beautiful as we are as a people and a culture, unfortunately, this too is our culture.
Mm-hmm.
This too is us as a people. And I think, you know, we need to grasp that as a reality and figure out, you know, how do we fix this as a community?
A lot of our songs are about us jacking people chains and how we'll run down.
Of course.
And do you feel like the music is encouraging this behavior?
My hands ain't clean. I ran around screaming this murder for 20 years. You know, even though it was metaphorically, you know, meant for me saying I'm killing the game or whatever the if you're a 12-year-old kid or you a, you know, 10-year-old kid, you know, coming up, 15-year-old kid, whatever the f*** it is, you don't per se know that. I'm just Ja Rule, impressionable, throwing up M's. You think it's gangster shit. And you know what I'm saying? Like, kids thought these was gang signs. They don't know. We all have a part to play in this. And, you know, this is me speaking as a 46-year-old man, three grown kids. You know, this isn't 20-year-old Ja Rule speaking, so I get it. You know, 20 years ago, I would have probably had a different take on all of this. You know, I probably would have been telling a guy like me, shut the fuck up, mind your business, homie. You ain't out here in the trenches with us no more. You living in your fucking mansion. Shut up. You know, I get it. I get it. But it's also time for them to fucking get it.
Right.
Yeah.
The same way I can sit here and say, yo, I get it. I know what you're going through. I know the struggle. I've been there. Went to jail, did 2 years. When I was very successful, had to go sit down. Those moments of real moments of clarity, that's when you get to really understand who you are as a man. You know, the mistakes you're making. There's no more time to point the finger. Now you're in this situation. Now you gotta own it. You gotta own it. You gotta own up to your mistakes. You gotta own up to what you've done to get yourself in this predicament. And so, you know, I learned that. And when you're living in it, you're living in the moment, it's hard to see.
We appreciate you so much for taking the time, lending your voice to these issues. I mean, you're an icon. It means so much. We know you're so busy, so we're going to say goodbye for now, but we're going to need you back in the BGS house because there's so much more to get to.
Yeah.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you so much.
Yes, this is to everyone out there.
Much love, y'all.
You got to make sure you download the Icon app right now. Catch a vibe. Yes.
Icon, two N's, man.
There we go.
Tell them with two N's. Icon.
Let me get my phone. Yes, thank you so much, Ja. It was a true pleasure. Thank you.
Much love, y'all. Appreciate y'all, ladies.
Up next, we have our BG Boss of the Week. Keep it locked for more Black Girl Stuff.
We are the homies!
I'm trying to be in her army. All right, put me on the front line.
That was the legendary Viola Davis starring in her new film, Woman King. Viola is a true trailblazer, and her worldwide recognition is not to be played with. This woman has won a Primetime Emmy, a Golden Globe, a Tony Award, and the list goes on and on. Aside from all of her awards, Viola has a history of philanthropy. She has donated funds to save her hometown library, and she has a collaboration with the Hunger Is campaign to help eradicate childhood hunger across America, y'all. However, one of her most famous quotes that we should all live by is, "The privilege of a lifetime is being who you are." We totally believe that, and we salute who you are, Viola Davis. You are forever a BG boss.
I mean, she's amazing, and I feel like we've all asked to see more Black heroines on the screen, and I loved what she had to say about that. It's like, okay, you want to see us? Come out and support us,
right? Now, Demetria, tell us about your BG Boss of the Week. We hear she is paving a new lane of her own.
Yes, under the sea, all right? Yeah, my BG Boss is none other than the super talented Halle Bailey. Not only is she taking over the Billboard charts, but she is now tackling the role of Princess Ariel in The Little Mermaid. Take a look. The feels. The feels.
Out of the sea. Wish I could be.
Perfect mermaid.
Wow. Part of that world.
I can't wait.
Girl, that world seemed way better than this one. I can't understand.
Oh, with the vibrato. Oh, that girl can sing.
Yes. All that.
This has inspired little black girls across the world. Hallie says, I want the little girl in me and the little girls just like me who are watching to know they are special and they should be a princess in every way. The trailer for The Little Mermaid has been trending all across our social feeds. And I'm sure we can all agree this is a major accomplishment. She's a Disney princess.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. Bow down. Hallie, we applaud you. Keep doing your thing, girl. We salute you for being a true BG boss.
And that's all the show for now. Thanks again to all of tonight's guests, Ja Rule, Kenan Thompson, all of the Tylers, and of course, BG's own Kennedy Rue for highlighting her chronicles. Yeah. Thanks so much for watching, y'all. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Baby, my butt keeps spinning cute. Ooh, ooh, that's just what I do.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about? Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.